Hello everybody, this is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home.
How are you?
How are you doing? How is you? How's your weekend? Do you work? Are you at work right now? I don't happen to work weekends, so this is my time of rest, freedom, creativity, downtime, excess. It's also the time that I have to take care of stuff, plan, clean, you know, get ready for the busier times. So I'm sitting here in my closet on a Sunday morning. It's quiet. My son just woke up. He has always been an early baby. Like when he was little, he would wake up at like 5 a.m. like clockwork. And of course, little babies go to bed really early too. They sleep like 14 or 15 hours out of the day. But he kept that schedule most of his life. And part of that is because I have to work early too, and I've had to work around school schedules. And so we wake up at 5 a.m. every single Monday through Friday stretch. And he's gotten, which was helpful because he was already such an early riser. And it's only been as he's gotten older that he's been starting to sleep in more. You know, that teenage syndrome where the child stays in the den, the dirty, dingy den, until like 11 o'clock or noon. And I know some 20-somethings that still do the same thing. And I'm not judging. I just don't have that opportunity. And so I've noticed him starting to take advantage of his weekends and sleeping in more, because it really starts with that intense desire on a Monday morning when you hear that alarm, that ring-a-ding-ding getting you up, and your stomach curls, and the inner will of your human, that desirous thing that decides what you want to do, all the temptation from that creature says to hit snooze and continue sleeping. You know, all you want to do on a Monday morning is just to continue sleeping. And so that Saturday morning, that Sunday morning, when like me, I happen to wake up with my alarm time anyways, and I have to decide to go back to bed to sleep in a little bit, and I might catch 30 minutes or an hour, but I'm so hardwired now. It's that memory of Monday morning that makes it so compelling on Sunday or Saturday. It makes it so nice. You know, and he woke up at 9 o'clock today, which is crazy. That's 4 hours of extra sleep. That's past what he usually has. And I'm happy for him, you know. I just read this Buddhist story, because I'm reading this compilation by this dude named Paul Reps or Repo, something like that. He put together a couple translations of old Buddhist texts from primarily China and Japan, from Zen Buddhism. And the story I read this morning talks about how there was this master, I think his name was Seyon, but he had fallen asleep as a young boy when his master had gone out, and the place that he had decided to fall asleep was, you know, very unfortunate because it happened to be the front door, you know. And I'm having a hard time, you know. Maybe I found Odin on the middle of the floor a couple times. He's been a fan of sleeping on the floor, but in a doorway, you know, it seems kind of difficult for me to picture, but maybe. So in the story, the boy falls asleep in the door, and his master comes home and has to step over him. And in the story, the master is just really courteous and treats the kid like a guest. And like, I guess the moral is that like the kid's so embarrassed that when he becomes a master and he's Sensei Seyon, he never sleeps in the daytime, you know? And it made me think about my own adversity to naps and how hard it is for me to give myself a break. And I always feel guilty if I fall asleep in the middle of the day. And if I sleep in too far, like when I was a teenager, whenever I did sleep until 11 o'clock or noon, I'd always feel so shitty about it. Like I'd wasted half my day, right? And it's like you had this super tight day. And when lunch becomes breakfast and dinner's there, you know, it would make me sad, you know? And so I want to kind of have an allowance for that freedom, you know, for Odin, for my child, and even for myself. And yesterday, I even took a nap, you know, and I was courteous to my body and I slept, and I've slept so much this weekend, and I'm going to have faith that that is a good setup going into my week, going into my Monday through Friday, because all that's sprinting and it's a lot of effort versus these last 2 days, you know. So maybe consider your own routines, because it's very unlikely that the vast majority of you listening to my voice right now have my exact routine. You have your own routine. You have your own day, your own families, your own partners, your own friends, your own different everything. And so I guess what I intend to do by sharing these anecdotes from my personal life and my ruminations and feelings about thus is to encourage you to look at your own and to think about your own systems and your own beliefs and patterns that you find yourself in. Time management is such a tricky thing, and it's more of a knack than a teachable skill. It's a tendency to approach an experience or an effort. It's something that perhaps people are born with. It can be practiced, but more so like a muscle, and how a muscle can approach several different happenstances. My bicep can pick up many different things and perform many different tasks, but the strength that's in the bicep is strengthened by all of those tasks. That's what I mean by it's more of a knack. And some people just have it, quote unquote. And I don't want to say, and I think this is slightly towards my feelings of brightness and hues and the uniqueness and separate personalities that are out there, with all of us being individuals sharing the world and being part of it, you know, but we all have our individualistic viewpoint and perspective that we build our lives from. And with those thoughts being seeded and grown by us individually, we have to figure out some way to meld it with all of our partners out there. So we all have to figure out how to manage ourselves the best so that we can give that to our species. And not just our species, but our world, all the other species, all the other life forms and ecologies that we are permanently imbued in. We're not as separate from everyone else or the world as we want to believe we are. Morality and conscience, even though rationally it's moral to do whatever we want as long as it's not affecting other people, I would also say it's moral to consider other people when we decide what we're going to do. You know, it's kind of a catch-22. And that gives you the immense freedom to do whatever the hell you want to do, but it also gives you the immense freedom to try to help other people. And the best way to do that is to work on ourselves, which has been a running theme that I have been consumed with for these last couple weeks. The self, though, when I say work on ourselves, is a very stretchy thing. It's a very flexible concept. You know, and as an infant, that concept of self is so physical and based in need, you know, and as we grow and begin to form more perspective, it becomes christened in individualism because we realize that vantage point, or maybe it's the lack of realization, but it's the only thing we have. And so part of growing and becoming an adult is learning how to make room for other people's perspective and other people's conceptions. And sometimes this may or may not happen in an adult either. So maybe it's a mark of maturity, really. But it still reinforces for me this flexible, elastic nature of my idea of self. And I am of the personal optimistic belief that each of us has a vast, infinite space within ourselves, and that and within that space we can hold everything. We have the ability to have empathy and love for anything. We have the ability to choose any destination or personality for our being. We can craft whatever we want, and from that internal world, we can manifest that on our creations in the external. And it's not exactly like magic, but we can bring difficulty into our worlds. We can bring happiness and joy into our worlds. And by doing that, we can bring joy into others because of the shared experience of it all. So, how can we make space so that our self can be as close to the universal idea of self as possible in the Hindu sense? I know I've spoken about this topic a lot. I'm going to go over it just briefly. In Hinduism, this idea of self with a capital S, an inverse to the lowercase self with a lowercase s, the big self is the para-atman, the little self being the atman, the soul of the individual, and the soul of the universe. It's this idea that the universe itself is this gigantic being, and the relationship of us, our little specks of insight and seeing, is the same as the relationship as a cell is to my body. I have trillions of different cells in my body. I have microorganisms. I have blood plasma. I have air that I breathe into my body through my lungs, and that is dispersed through every cell so that every single cell can burn and create fire that imitates the very plasma of the sun. As every bit of my cell and all the minerals in my body is replaced every 7 years by the earth. You know, there's this parallel, this mirror image of beingness with the world and our own internal beingness. It's like in the speck of an atom is the relationship of the universe, not to be too emphatic. But can we not have room and space for the other? I heard of this interesting concept in my readings recently, where you have ego, you know, the ego is the desire based, it's the systems and tool that we use to get what we need. And the digression between need and wants is flimsy and abstract at best. But the agency by which we cause things into being, and there's a lot of different spectrum of that, whether it's going to the fridge to make ourselves a sandwich or influencing our team members. But egoism has its opposite in altruism. Altruism being charity and the lack of self, unselfishness that is necessary in order to give. You know, consider volunteerism. Consider the giving of personal time to help something else, the other. And in this discussion of egoism and altruism, it looked into the etymology, the word science, the history of meaning that can be garnered from this vernacular. And ego's opposite in the Latin is alter. Altruism comes from altruism. And the way words breed and change a little bit, I just never saw this connection. So the alter ego, this other self, ego being this concept of individual self, but the small self in the Hindu or the Brahmanic sense. See? So all the alter egos out there that we are surrounded by perpetually, all these others, all these other selves, this alter ego is a concept as much as this ego is, this little self. There is no para-other, I feel. So it's working our way backwards to this connectivity with the other that I am obsessed with. It's being able to listen to the other and open my heart and my ears and my mind to this other, to this altar. Not like an altar, even though that brings in even more compelling connections when it comes to worship of the world and how religion comes into this feeling of connectivity with the other. Because I feel that religion is just another symptom or description of this relationship. Could it ever not be? As we all find our relationship with connectivity, as we all look at the world around us and we build our connections to it, which is all we can do. Nobody can't not be part of the world. Even if we sequester ourselves in isolation, we're still isolated with ourself, and within ourself is the connection to the world, the mirrored universe. Anyhow, that's my ramble. I really appreciate you sitting and listening with me. It's a special moment when we find our attention again. And I'm enamored by the fact that I have this opportunity to sit here. It's so important to me to be able to try to find some message of assistance. I'm going to read from a book here soon. It's called Thinking Like a Mountain. And it's a very excellent compilation of poets and short essays about a lot of these ideas that I find compelling. And it's called Deep Ecology in this sense, which is this connection to, you know, ecology. It's environmentalism, but teaching people to see environmentalism through empathy. Like, instead of going out to save a forest as a person and trying to use force and power to save the forest, it's this idea of expressing it as a piece of the forest coming back to save itself. I have an episode on empathy and sympathy way back in the backlog somewhere, where I go into this nuance even further. But sympathy is when we see another and we feel bad for it. Empathy is when we have shared the feeling of suffering or joy in another And we share that feeling with them because we know that feeling. And within mirror neurons in the human capacity, if we've experienced it, we can physically share it, physiologically at least. So, in increasing people's sensitivity and empathy towards the other, in this sense, nature, ecology, not human, you make somebody put themselves into the headspace of the not human. And part of deep ecology is making somebody sense the despair that has come from the separation with humans isolating themselves from not human and isolating themselves from nature. And sometimes feeling that feeling of sadness that comes from that isolation that may not have even been acknowledged or seen can be a very alchemic and fulfilling tool to be used for growth or change, sometimes in the outside world for trying to compel environmental change. Anyhow, I want to read a brief segment from this book, and then we'll go get Odin, and then I'm going to let you go. So thank you for being such a lovable human, an amazing creature, a piece of this huge quilt of beauty that is our world. All right. The piece I'm reading from is by a person named Arne Naess. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. I feel like I've heard this name many times, which really made me excited to read it, but I don't remember where or how I heard it referenced. Anyways, here we go. It's from a piece called Self-Realization, an Ecological Approach to Being in the World. For at least 2,500 years, humankind has struggled with basic questions about who we are, what we are heading for, what kind of reality we are part of. 2,500 years ago is a short period in the lifetime of a species. And still, less in the lifetime of the Earth, on whose surface we belong as mobile parts. What I'm going to say more or less in my own way may roughly be condensed into the following 6 points. We underestimate ourselves. I emphasize self. We tend to confuse it with the narrow ego. Point one. Point two. Human nature is such that with sufficient all-sided maturity, we cannot avoid identifying ourselves with all living beings, beautiful or ugly, big or small, sentient or not. I will elucidate my concept of identifying later. Three. Traditionally, the maturity of the self develops through 3 stages, from ego to social self, and from social self to metaphysical self. In this conception of the process, nature, our home, our immediate environment, where we belong as children and our identification with living human beings, is largely ignored. I therefore tentatively introduce the concept of an ecological self. We may be in, of, and for nature from our very beginning. Society and human relations are important, but our self is richer in its constitutive relations. These relations are not only relations we have with humans and the human community, but with the large community of all living beings. The joy and meaning of life is enhanced through increasing self-realization, through the fulfillment of each being's potential. Whatever the difference between beings, increased self-realization implies broadening and deepening the self. 5. Because of an inescapable process of identification with others, with growing maturity, the self is widened and deepened. We see ourselves in others. Self-realization is hindered if the self-realization of others, with whom we identify, is hindered. Love of ourself would labor to overcome this obstacle by assisting in the self-realization of others according to the formula live and let live. Thus, all that can be achieved by altruism, the dutiful, moral consideration of others, can be achieved, and much more, through widening and deepening ourselves. Following Immanuel Kant's critique, we then act beautifully, but neither morally nor immorally. 6. The challenge of today is to save the planet from further devastation, which violates both the enlightened self-interest of humans and non-humans, and decreases the potential of joyful existence for all. The simplest answer to who or what I am is to point to my body using my finger. But clearly, I cannot identify myself or even my ego with my body. For example, compare. I know Mr. Smith with my body knows Mr. Smith. I like poetry with my body likes poetry. The only difference between us is that you are a Presbyterian and I am a Baptist. With the only difference between our bodies is that our body is Presbyterian, whereas mine is Baptist. In the above sentences, we cannot substitute my body for I, nor can we substitute my mind, or my mind and body for I. But this, of course, does not tell us what the ego or the self is. All right. Beautiful writing. It's actually from a speech. Beautiful mind. Beautiful thinker. I don't know. This is my favorite thing, guys. I love these books. I don't know if you can tell. And I really appreciate being able to share them with you. So thank you for your time. Appreciate your ears. Very grateful you woke up and took a breath this morning. All the things. Be grateful for you. I'm going to try being grateful for me. Let's go get home.
Hello, it's Asko again with the gingerbread man.
What you doing?
Well, I was licking some of this candy.
Candy. What color is it?
It looks like purple.
It does look purple.
Who said boys didn't like purple?
No one, I don't think. I certainly didn't.
Yeah.
Did you know your shirts are backwards?
That's... yeah. I might need to switch off my shirt.
That's okay. I do it all the time.
Yeah.
All right, pal. I love you.
I love you.
Thanks for coming and saying hi.
Yeah, I'm good. Actually, for real, I actually have some candy for proving that you can hear this. That's full of the candy.
Jeez. You're ridiculous.
That's the candy.
All right. Have a good week, everybody. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.